one right.
And to start with, Rick reports on Sunday night, on his weekend, Saturday and Sunday, working for Eddie, this Sunday, the 1st of April, 73. And then way on over, about half of it, it is Monday night, after he's gone to his typewriter, and reports all over again, and this is a remarkable report. This is the one in which he sees Eddie. Channel 1 right. it starts on Sunday night, the 1st of April, and then the second half of it is Rick reporting Monday night, the 2nd of April. This is Rick reporting first Sunday night after the whole weekend, Saturday and Sunday, working helping Eddie. The first Sunday, the 1st of April, 73. The second half is his reporting Monday night, the 2nd of April, 73, after he's looked at the face over the typewriter.
I can see the puddles in the road coming in.
Yeah. Did you come around this way?
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's solid enough.
It's solid
to come
now.
In.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm about ready. I don't know. I would keep this fan on. About it cool? About it hot?
Mm-mm.
I was hot a while ago. I guess when I came in. Gee, that's nice. I'm glad to have a little air. Fresh air. I'd take those windows. Open those windows last night. Rick wasn't here last night, was he?
He just came in to report a little bit.
I mean, that's something.
No. Oh, no, he wasn't here.
Visitors.
Oh, they came for a purpose. Virgil is still abroad.
Oh no. Oh no.
I haven't got much energy left.
I'm not brimming.
After 2 days, no.
Yeah. I wish I could get the hang of it like Eddie does.
Yeah.
Eddie doesn't get rattled.
Yeah.
And I am plagued with the worst kind of efficiency.
Yeah.
Oh, I just want to get everything done.
Why, Rick?
And you just don't know what it does to me to realize that, well, if you want to stand around for 10 minutes, then stand around. When I worked in a grocery store, I was moving all the time. I may not have been doing anything, but I sure looked like it.
Yeah.
And I can't get rid of it.
Rick!
I've got a broom in my hand while I'm over there, or straightening up an oil rack, or untwisting the hoses, and I'll get in a hurry and stick that hose into the gas and squeeze it, and it'll all fly back on me, and I'll be sitting there dripping with gasoline. And I grab the high test pump when they want regular and start putting it in. They go, whoop, oh no.
You have to get used to that.
I just tickle Eddie just back there. Today, we had a fella come in, wanted a tire worked on. He wanted two of them taken off the rim and switched onto some other rims. So Eddie let me do it. Well, I didn't know how to run the tire machine. And I'd get halfway into it, and Eddie'd have to come over and undo the whole thing, because I'd get the tool jammed in between the tire and the rim, and he'd have to undo it. And the whole time, he's over there with this engine he just bought. You know, he had that big Chevy with a great big engine in it. Well, he traded it for a Camaro that's about a 67, but with the engine's all taken apart. Got to have some work done. So Eddie just traded even and got this car, this Camaro, with this great big engine. It's 396 cubic inch V8. And he spends all his time cleaning this engine up, because he wants to rebuild it and have to drive around. But he says, of course, if somebody offers me enough, I'll sell it. That's what Janet wants him to do. So this fella, I'm doing his tires, and Eddie's just over there with an air gun blowing the water off the engine parts that he's just finished washing down. And I'm sweating and jerking, and the fella's just watching me, and I'm thinking, what if I tear up his tire? What if I tear up his tire? Eddie! He doesn't turn around. He just keeps washing down his engine. Eddie, come here and help me. And he finally, you know, just kind of shoulder slump a little bit inside. He sticks the hose in the engine block, and he walks over and pushes on the pedal and just holds the tool, and it goes on around. He drops it, goes back, washes his engine like he'd never broken stride, you know. Well, while I'm working on this fella's tires, you see, this other guy comes in and he wants a tube put in the tire. Then two other fellows come in, they both want tire patches.
Oh, Rick. Oh.
Meanwhile, these old tires I'd put on the rim wouldn't hold air. And Eddie finally took over, because I didn't know what to do. And he pops them off and wipes them around, and this fella standing over there with this big truck tire just going psss with a hole. And I kept wanting to go over and open up the valve stem, get all the air out, because I got so tired of that hissing. Eddie just was like nobody else was there. He just took his time. Wiped it off, put a little glue on there, put the tire back together, and it sealed, you know, up against the rim where it had been leaking. And meanwhile, I'm having to run out there and put gas in cars and everything. And he'd get backed up, and Eddie'd just walk off and put some gas in the car and walk back and go back to putting that tube in. And he's got this tube for this fella. And what they do is they put this stuff on it, see, when they're going to patch it, and then light it on fire. And that gets the tube hot, and then they put a patch on there, and it sticks. So Eddie just cleans it all off, and he lights it, and the tube just rips apart. He said, you know, I thought he'd do that. And I thought, my God, he's just torn the man's tube all to pieces. He said, that's just so rotten. And the other guy says, yeah, I guess it is, isn't it? And he just pulls it off and throws it behind him. The fella had two more tubes he wanted him to try. And I thought, well, I'll be damned, because I looked at the tubes, and if that one was rotten, these two were worse. They were just dusty, you know, and checked. And I thought Eddie ought to get a little irritated at least, because I knew it'd be, you know, a good deal of work to patch them. The first one he blew up, you could see it was so rotten it had cracked and was pulling apart. And he just went about his business, didn't recommend that the guy buy a tube at all. Patched that one up and stuck it in the tire. Well, I had the lug nuts in my pocket, you see, and I was out pumping gas. A little while, the fellow comes out and says, whatever happened to those lug nuts? I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Gave him the lug nuts. And Eddie'd get in the middle of it, he'd just sit down and talk to somebody, you know. Game commission fella came in, and I was trying to figure out how to write up the charge card, and running back and forth. I'm thinking, Eddie, how do I write this? Oh, same as the shell. What do I ring it on? Just, yeah. And that's all he'd say. Just ring it up. And he'd go over and talk to the guy that come in from the Game and Freshwater Commission, and I'm busy trying to get the gas in the tank and write up the bills. And just ease about the whole thing. Well, he had this tractor out there. We'd gotten all the tires done, you see, and the gas thing had slacked off. And there's one of Wood's tractors, I think, had this harrow on the back. And the harrow had lift built into it. So we got on the tractor. It was old Alice Chalmers. I mean, it's old. Looks like it's older than Burnett's. And the seat is off to one side. And it's got one lever to run the gas and one to run the hydraulic lift. So we found out. And then just old little wires to pull and levers to move. And we didn't know how it worked. So I got up there because I figured, well, it's like this one. Well, the clutch is like this one, and that's about the extent of it. I pushed the clutch in and got it neutral and tried to start it up. And you got to pull this rod, and that pushes the starter button. Well, that wouldn't work. So Eddie just reaches over and jams it with his finger and starts it up. Then we couldn't figure out how to get the lift up. So I left it to go pump some more gas, and I look over, and Eddie's got it up in the air. And he drives on by me and says, you know that lever on the other side? And I said, yeah, well, I found out what it's for. And then he drove on off. And it was to get the lift up. Because I couldn't find out how to do it. Well, he pulled it on in there. And I guess that tractor had been sitting there all day, you see. And it was only now, it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that he was finally getting around to fixing it. Whenever he'd have a slack time, he'd go work on his own car. And just leave the tractor sitting. And I thought, if it had been me, I would have hauled it in there at 9 o'clock this morning to work on it. And he just welded away on it. And I looked at it, and he finished. And he said, you see those little nicks, that's where I go too fast. But for what they're paying, that's a pretty good welding job. So when I first got that machine, though, I used to pile it up like that, you know, an inch or so. Well, I can do pretty good now. Well, we couldn't get the tractor out. We couldn't get it in reverse. And about that time, some fellow, black fellow, came up and he drove it for Woods, ran the tractor for Woods. And he says, well, wait a minute. And he pops a little rubber gasket off the gear shift and pulls the whole thing out, sticks the screwdriver down in there and wiggles it around, and that shifts it into gear. Then he pushed the gear shift lever back in and backed it out. And Eddie just kind of, I don't think I'll be a farmer.
Was that fella, black fella, tall?
Tall and thin.
CS.
CS.
Did he talk?
Not much. That tractor was running the whole time. We couldn't hear. It gets noisy in there, and you're running an air wrench or blowing water off something with an air gun, or you got a motor running.
Yeah.
Well, he left the tractor all day. Now he's got another car in there. He's supposed to put a whole engine in. Well, he's got it in, almost. He's got to hook all the wires and the hoses and things back up to it, and finish putting the mounting bolts in.
That's what you did last night.
Yeah, we dropped it in last night and got it lined up. And, you know, so he'd every now and then go over and put a wire on the spark plug or tighten up on the air conditioner bolts a little bit, and then he'd get tired and just leave it and go over and work in his car. He'd open the hood on this old Camaro and say, well, I got to get that part and new mounting for the radiator and clean the rust off that fender. And his son is inside the whole time, wiping off the headliner with a cleaner. And people kept driving in, and I'd run pump gas, and they'd have troubles. And they'd say, well, it's rattling, it's vibrating. And I'd say, well, let me get Eddie. And I knew where he'd be. He'd be sitting inside that Camaro, wiping it off.
You didn't expect anything like that.
No. I thought Eddie would just work himself to death trying to repair everything. And he's got a car, and you know, he traded. See, he had an old 55 Chevy. Well, the body was fair. The engine was one Eddie'd had for a long time. It's a racing engine. It's got 2 4-barrel carburetors. And, well, it's just a huge, huge engine. And I guess he ran it on a quarter-mile strip. It's not made for driving down the road much. It's just too much power. And the parts are pretty expensive in that kind of thing. You can pay, say, $100 for one carburetor. Mm-hmm. Well, he traded the whole thing for this Camaro, you see. And Janet was there when the fellow first came in, you know, and was asking for some parts. And saw Eddie's Chevrolet and went and looked at it. He and Eddie got talking, and Eddie came back, and Janet said, "Are you going to sell it to him?" I said, "No." He says, "You're not going to trade, are you?" And they said, "Well, might." Well, when I went over there Friday night, Janet was in the station by herself and her son. And I said, "Eddie be back pretty soon?" And she said, "Yeah, he just went down to Ocala for a few minutes, but it's been 2.5 hours. Well, a little after 9, he came up in that little red Datsun pickup. And Janet looks at it when he comes in, looks in the back, and says, "Oh, we traded." And I looked back there, and there was the engine, all taken apart. The block by itself, and the pistons in a box. And he drove in, says, "You know, as soon as I got it in, it started raining." And Janet said, "You traded, didn't you?" "Yeah, I traded. He's going to haul it off in the morning." So the fella came, brought the body of the Camaro in that Saturday morning and took away the Chevy. So I haven't quite figured out what Eddie's got in mind, because he got rid of a car that ran and got a car that's in pieces.
He loves to make cars.
And he's got to do some work on that car. Not only put the engine together, but he's got to, you know, add the bodies in rough shape. He says, "Oh, it'll take me about a week." "It'll take me 6 months.
Just doesn't get it.
Well, was that a little bit too much for Franklin? A little hard on him.
I don't see where it would be. Unless maybe keeping up with the finances, you know, remembering to ring things up. But after a while, that gets to be habit. That's not hard. But see, Franklin was doing mechanics, too. Mechanical work. And, I kind of got the feeling for the few times I was over there that you had to tell Franklin what to do. He wouldn't take the initiative, didn't quite know. If he didn't have a gasket, he'd stop.
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't go on and do all the other things you could do without that gasket. Here, Eddie went to put this engine in, and you know, you have a little pipe that the dipstick goes in. And this rebuilt engine he's putting in this car didn't have one. But he went ahead and put the engine in anyway. He'll get one tomorrow and stick it in. It doesn't stop him.
Uh-huh.
And he hadn't even finished getting all the bolts to tighten the engine and hold it in place. He said, "Oh, I'll do that tomorrow." He just goes about his business. And all these people that come in, he talked to them at least for a few minutes. Always got the time.
Yeah, always seems to.
Well, I hadn't noticed him linger.
Didn't talk a long time, but he does talk. And most of the people that come in will talk if they're not from out of state. The out of state people, Eddie says, they all think you're going to cheat them, trying to take you for a ride. You say, check your oil, you know. You do it just as a courtesy, although you're happy if they'll buy a quart. Oh, no, it's okay, because they're afraid you'll get under there and mess something up.
Hmm.
It's surprising.
Yeah.
But the people from around that area, a fella came in today, had an old Buick Holiday. It was about a 55 or 56, and the great big things. It was red and black. And I filled it up with high test. So said, you need some oil. And he says, put the best in it. So I got some Quaker State Deluxe and put in there. And that was when Eddie was bringing that old tractor around. And he said, oh, that's an old one. So I said, well, you recognize those things? He said, oh, I grew up on them. I said, well, you must be around this area. And he said, well, I work for one of the biggest horse farms in this nation. And I thought, well, that's got to be Hobo Farms. And I said, well, what's that? And he says, Hobo Farms. And I said, well, you must know old Work Carter. And he goes, yeah.
Right.
I says, well, who are you? And he says, my name's Marvin Mann. He says, well, I don't, who I know, he said, is Mr. McIntyre. And he hunts with those fellows a lot. I said, yeah, I've gone out there and hunted a little bit with him. About that time, Eddie had to bring the tractor in, so the fella had to move his car. But they've got their time and their ease to talk. The black ones, not so much, the black people. If they've got a big car, like a big Oldsmobile or something. But if it's just a Ford or something, most of them, they're older people, and they'll linger and talk. And always try to get it in on the rack free and do a little repair on their own.
Oh. Oh, really?
Some fella came in last night with a Chrysler products. Instead of using a spring for the suspension, they use a bar. And as the car comes down, the bar twists. That's a torsion bar. Well, they bust in half now and then, and this guy had busted one in half, and the car was just dragging. And he hadn't paid his bill in over a year. And Eddie was giving him an awful hard time about that, but the guy, you know, kept joshing and guy, you know, taking all the ribbon that he gave him, and like saying, you know, the car's on the rack, and Eddie's got his torch out and cut the bar out. And he and Eddie and I drove the new one in. And he paid him for it, I think. And went off and left those year-old bills in there.
Mm. I hope most of the gas and all that was paid cash. I hate to see Eddie's have bills on up.
But Janet likes to know what goes on.
Yeah, I think she keeps really tight control of the money. Eddie had all the cash and he was taking in the house. And I said, well, don't spend it all in one place, Eddie. He said, oh, hell, I'll turn it over to my wife and that'll be it. So I don't think he does any of the books at all. I think she does the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if she's out there, I think she can say more about what goes on around there than he can or will. But she hasn't been out too much today. I think since I'm there, it'll give her a breather enough to straighten up her house and get caught up a little bit. And then she'll probably come back around a little bit.
He stays open on Sunday from 9 till 6.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good long while, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess the rest of the week it's 7 to 9. Yeah, 7 to 9 at night.
Yeah.
So he puts in quite a few hours.
He puts in hours. Now, he can't last forever at that, you know.
Mm-mm.
There'll come a time when he'll close it up.
Well, you know, she said they were in the fall, they were just sort of desperate for somebody to be able to keep it open at least on Sunday so that they could get off just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Get away just a little bit. That she said Eddie's, he doesn't need to get away. He likes it here better than he likes it anywhere else. But,
yeah, that's... There's not too much to do on Sunday but patch tires and pump gas. It's about the extent of it.
You know, not all those stations patch tires anymore. anymore.
Yeah.
I have no care for that job.
Oh.
That's right. They won't work monkey with that old tire.
And Eddie, they, you know, these black people especially are always just replacing a tire with something they've got off an old junk car. Mm-hmm. They're never putting new tires on. So that means you've got to take it off one rim and put it on another. And I guess Eddie spent a good hour and a half, he and I, pulling those tires and mounting them and then having to take them off again and find the holes.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of irritation.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie charged him, I think, $4.
Mm-hmm.
And change tire is something he charges only $1. You can't even get inside a station for that.
Well, you kind of have to have a mastery. That's a lot word of the what goes on before you can start looking.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have to think about how to fill out all the little charge slips and
yeah,
just little things like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what to do if the charge machine jams. Or,
mm-hmm.
And Eddie tickles me because Janet's the one that, you know, that tells me
mm-hmm.
the thing. Eddie let me go change a tire. Go right ahead. And I start filling with that machine, and I'd watched him use it, but he'd never said a word about it. And I could see about how it was done, but I'd get mixed up and use the wrong end of the tool.
Well, you know, I watched her when Frank was looking at something, and she'd say, you know, she wouldn't tell him what to do, but she would just make a sort of a statement that make him look and see. She was real good with him, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew because she could tell exactly, and it was just some minor thing.
According to Cookie, you know, Franklin has to have his own tools at this new place.
Hmm. That runs into money.
Well, you can buy cheap ones.
You can tear them up, though.
He can.
That's what Eddie's pretty much in the process of doing is getting the tools for his business. And I don't mean little wrenches. He's got, you know, a hoist for an engine,
uh-huh.
and then a mount to hold the engine while he works on it. And he wanted to buy a front end aligning machine, but that was $1,000. So he's got, I guess, another year or so just building up the business so he can handle it all.
Yeah.
But I went in and I thought, you know, I'm supposed to clean and straighten the place up, so I was working on that, and there's quite an accumulation of grease that I was trying to get down. And Janet says, now don't throw anything away, because I had kidded her. I said, no, I'm a great throwawayer. And she said, don't you throw anything away unless you ask. Because I've had to go to the junkyard sometimes and dig things out that I'd thrown away because he was using them.
Oh.
You see, when I always worked in a car, I learned from experience that it's better to label your bolts and put them in order. Eddie just lays them down. In this car, he's putting the engine in. There's bolts that go all the way around, you know, on the fenders and on across the front by the windshield. The bolts are just laid down all the way around. There's some are on the floor, and there are parts. The hood's sitting on top of the roof, and the radiator's over against the wall, and the screws have fallen out and on the floor. He never seems to miss a bolt. I looked over and he had the distributor on today and all the wires. And I thought, I bet he never marked a wire. And you got 8 wires, there's a lot of combinations. But he got it right.
It's got to be hard on you, Rick.
Yeah. She, Janet said, you know, there was nothing in here when we started.
That's
and
right.
Now he's got two complete engines and three or four that are in various, you know, stages of being taken apart. And generators and starters just scattered all down in the shelves, old ones. And I guess maybe 15 or 20 old carburetors. And then he's got oil pans filled with engine parts and buckets filled with engine parts. And there are 5-gallon cans sitting all around in there with just something black and gooey in them. You don't know what it is. And he picked up a bucket today. He needed a bucket to put some soapy water in to wash the floor. And he picked it up and said, hey, what's in this, Rick? And I said, I don't know, Eddie. You put it in there. He'd just done it yesterday because I'd used the bucket before. I have to say, he's kind of a sloppy housekeeper. But Janet said when Franklin first started, he worked weekends and cleaned up. But it would take Eddie all week to find out where everything was because Franklin had put it back in the right place. And Eddie just scatters it from one end to the other.
It's a little difficult to clean up.
I think sweep the floor and push the grease around is about the most you can do.
And not be too conscientious.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't seem to miss a wrench. He drops one on the floor, and I'm scrambling around to get it, and I grabbed it, crawled out from under the car, and handed it to him. He already had another one. You know, you got to get on your hands and knees and crawl under, and it's dirty and greasy.
You run around to get somebody something. They've got it before you get on to it. I guess what they just supposed to stand there and wait to get ready to get it. I wonder if that's intelligence. It would take some intelligence to be casual.
I don't know.
See, Cookie is all, when I see him, he's efficient. I went to eat monkey rock with an engine.
You don't finish your job till you clean your tools and put them back where they belong and all that sort of talk. Well, I used to go over there, Rick, when the Ford tractor was over there. And even I could see the parts of the Ford tractor all over the place. And I didn't think he'd ever get it back together. And if he did, it'd never run.
Mm-hmm. I guess after a while you get used to the old parts laying around, and then you don't think of them as parts. They're just kind of part of the building.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to take advantage of all the cleaning I'll do, you know. Janet kind of smiled today and said, are you very good at windows? I said, oh, I suppose so. And she pointed to the windows on the roll-up doors. They got a little crusty.
Well, I didn't know the front man was supposed to work on tires.
Yeah, all the little things. whatever takes Eddie away from working on his car, that's what you do.
Stall, I think. The last thing I'd want to be is efficient.
Yeah, I'm finding that out.
Not when I don't have the responsibility. I lean on the shovel. What did Darius Collard say?
Oh.
Less than a hole?
Yeah, I don't know word, but. One cut it and eat it, but it was something like that. Well, it's amazing how much. I don't know. When I go over there, there's always somebody there.
Well, Faye, this was a rainy. Time.
You had. I hope you didn't. You weren't too busy. When you getting started?
Not this morning. He just unlocked the door and went back to work on his car. And it was raining hard, and I was back there just fiddling around. Two or three people just drove through and kept on going. And Eddie finally, after the third one, said, "Oh, shoot. Maybe we ought to open a door." So I went over, opened the door, and halfway to the garage, and then found he had the clothes sign out.
Oh.
He tickles me. He buys these things from, they have a distributor that comes around that sells, I guess it must be high profit items, like oil spouts to stick in a can, you know, and screens to put in front of your radiator and alarm systems. And Eddie, you just stick the box in the window or up on the shelf. Well, if you want to sell those kind of things, you've got to push them, because people don't come in and ask for them. But Eddie will buy five or six of them and say, "I'm going to sell these," and stick them up on the shelf, and that's the last you hear.
Well, they both said that they weren't complaining about what they were making. I don't know what.
I think income tax caught them. They said they had to pay out $400 this month on income tax. So they've been a little gripey about that. And then finding out they couldn't afford the front end alignment machine because it was so, $1,000. Whew!
Trouble to use it. Why would they want that?
Apparently he's trying to build up a pretty complete service there.
Well, he don't have the manpower.
Yeah, he needs another full-time mechanic.
And if he does that, he will get into it. Because he got to be responsible for what that other mechanic does. That's where they get you. Well, I'm going to tell you, Rick, that's going to call for too much efficiency for your purpose.
Well, you get to where when you pump gas, it won't be any trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You won't have to think about it.
Tell you there, too.
Mm-hmm. I'll learn all the places they can put a gas cap. Or an oil stick.
Well, you've never worked in a filling station.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a shame they don't have an itinerance anymore. Tinker, the old Butter and Egg Man, he'd go around and pick up the poultry and let them have groceries. It is a shame. It is a shame. Because that was Ratliff's meat. Faye?
Yeah?
I don't know why. I think I must have looked too much. My eyes went red before. I'm going to have to.
You've been trying to get over a haircut all day.
Oh, Lord. Why don't I go on over and get that?
Tonight? This late? Okay.
How's the road?
No, that's pretty good. I came in the front.
You didn't mean you didn't come in by cookies? Why don't I do that?
And your cows don't have to be taken out or anything. Okay.
Too late. I forgot about it. I would have. Yes, I'd go on over there and see you, Mr.
He just said,
yes,
said he'd come on in just a second. He's going to ask.
Yes, ma'am.
And what you going to do, work up yonder?
Yes, ma'am. I'm running the tractor through the middle of that. We got some watermelon planted up there. And all
hey,
that.
I didn't know who you are.
Oh, yeah.
You ride a tractor?
I ride it if I'm dying. Yeah, I wake up a little bit this morning because I didn't have to work the shop this morning. I had to go back about 2, 3 o'clock. Or 3 o'clock gets started.
Oh, yeah.
So I was running the...
Hell, I know he's Burnett.
Oh, no, not even Burnett.
He's the only one I see on the tractor.
I see, yeah.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Me and Isaiah got this place planted up in watermelons, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm going to run through the mills there a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, you and Isaiah?
Yes, ma'am.
I see. Mm-hmm. Well, guy thought you was... Yeah.
Okay.
I thought you was going to do some work around here.
No, ma'am.
Well, let me tell you, Leslie, how is it looking over there?
Over here?
Yeah.
Well, that grass is growing right through the watermelon. That's right. What kind of grass you call that thing? So we got to get in and try to hoe it just soon to get dry enough.
Well, the ground's pretty good shape to work, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty fair. Pretty good shape.
Yeah. You're going to have a right smart invest in that place. You'll have to work it out.
Too much. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I see.
You gotta make some watermelon, can't you?
Yes, ma'am. I sure hope I do get something out of it.
Yeah. He and Isaac are the ones that planted those melons.
You're not using your outdoor voice.
I said it's he and Isaiah that planted those melons.
Yeah, that's what Miss Bessie said.
And now he's having his doubts. think it's already cost him more than he's going to make with all that Johnson grass.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to hoe it. Once he gets in between those rows cut, they're going to have to go down and hoe it, he said. He was just trying to get that little bit cut in there. And that coming up, he says, they're coming up good. You could see them.
Yeah.
When the wind blew the Johnson grass out of the way.
You say that?
No, that's what it was happening.
Yeah.
He got stuck down under the trees and choked down. He had to crank it by hand, tore his hand up. You know, just bruised it a little bit.
Well, you got down there at the right time.
Well, just when he was coming back up.
After he bruised his hand?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't quite get to end time, did you?
No, I had to pass by and wait a while and come back again.
He
just stopped a minute there, you know.
I didn't hear the tractor.
See, just when I got up there, he was going down. So I talked to the horse a minute, and I could see he was waiting under those trees. So I just went on, waited off a while, and came back. And he was coming. I heard him come back up, and I came on back. And then just went on past him and stopped and backed up, you know. Stepped up.
Ooh, me. Just gotta be doing some hoeing.
Just pick up a hoe and get out with him, maybe, or something.
The first thing you got to do is ask them how much to pay you. You got to, that's what they do, you see.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
See who he's going to get to do that.
Yeah, you know, it was old Burnett that they got to cut it down. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
I guess they hired Burnett.
Yeah.
That's surprising.
Surprised me. He didn't say why.
After supper, after supper, after supper, after supper, after supper, after supper, this Monday, the 2nd of April, after supper. After supper, after supper, this Monday, the 2nd of April, after supper.
Well, excuse me, Rick, I just needed to clear up that, clear up the table. You never quite knew, realized what we meant by Cookie turning a wrench.
You know, I always paid attention to just the wrench, and to somebody that could pick one up, you know, and just, well, do their work, and never really pay much attention to it, to something I just never could quite see.
Yeah.
But I saw it this weekend over at Eddie's.
Yeah.
Because that Sunday afternoon, see, I couldn't see much Saturday. I was learning the ropes. That Sunday, I knew how to pump the gas and ring out the bills and things, so I could have a little leisure.
Yeah.
And we'd had a slow day. But then, about the middle of the afternoon, we had a lot of customers come in with bad tires. We had one fella who had a slow leak. And he said, I had a tube put in. The fella just stuck one in and didn't charge me for it. I don't know if it's any good. And Eddie was back there washing off this engine. This is the engine he traded for. In fact, that's what he did most of the whole day, was just wash this engine off. And I says to Eddie, there's a fellow out there with a leaking tire. And Eddie says, check the tire valve. And he went back and washed his engine. So I checked the valve, and it was okay. And I said, Eddie, that valve's okay. He goes, well, bring it in. So we put the truck on the lift and pulled the tire off, and I took it over to Eddie. And he pulled the tube out and blew it up, and I stepped back a little bit, and he says, kind of grins at me, you know, what are you stepping back for? It's not going to blow up. Well, he filled it up till it was two or three times the size it had been when he started. And he hauled it over there and put water all over it and finally found a little bubble and brought it back and rubbed some compound on it and then put some more of this other kind of stuff on it. And then he pulls out his pipe and lights a match and lights his pipe. Then he lights another match and touches it to the tube, and that catches it on fire. We put that stuff on there. And what he was doing is heating the tube, so he put a hot patch on. Well, of course, the tube just ripped in half, you know. And he just looked at it and said, you know, I thought it'd do that. It's rotten. And he didn't seem a bit surprised that he just ruined the man's old tube. Well, the fellow said, yeah, I guess it would have. And he brought two more tubes in. They looked worse than the one that he'd finished with. They were all covered with dust. When Eddie blew the first one up, you could just see it cracking in five places. And Eddie ran his finger down one spot where it looked like somebody had slid it almost through with a knife. So he put that one aside and started working on the other, and I had to pump gas. So when I got back in there, Eddie was still working on that tube. And he had two more people waiting to get their tires fixed. And one was a big old truck tire. And it was just going whoosh like that. And it must have hissed for 10 minutes. But Eddie just took his time, and they'd finished up that truck, and he was working on this other tire. And every time they'd mount that tire to the rim, it'd leak where the tire met the rim. And he'd have to deflate it and pop it off and clean the rim and put glue on it. And it must have taken him 45 minutes to do all that, you know, keep taking that tire off. And he still got all these people standing there waiting to get their tires fixed. And then another fellow drove up in a blue Ford Falcon and said he needed oil in the transmission. And Eddie said, is that thing still leaking? Haven't you got it fixed yet? Well, I was getting in a hurry. I thought, we've got to get these people out of here. And I was running out there, you know, to put gas in people's car, and I'd forget my oil rag and wipe the dipstick off with my fingers, and it burned my fingers. And I would get my hands full of credit cards or dollar bills, and I couldn't get the gas cap on because I had too much in my hand. But Eddie's just back there taking his time, putting his tire on, you know, tapping around, trying to get it to sit on the rim. And he's saying to this fella, well, the fellow's name was Roger, and he was saying, Robert, and he was saying to Robert's wife, he's saying, so he's not looking at his tire much, he's just tapping on it. And he says, how come I see Robert coming by here every morning? And she goes, what? It's about 8:30, he comes out of McIntosh and goes by here every morning. I just don't know what he's doing. And Robert goes, no, you ain't seen me going by there in the morning. And Eddie just tap on that tire a little more and kid Robert, I don't know, it looks like your car goes by here every morning. And then I saw it. Eddie had that ease. He's got all those people waiting on him. He's got this tire he's got to take off the rim two or three times, but you'd never realize it. It's like he's got all the time in the world to stop and talk and give Robert a hard time. Well, we got two cars out there, and I was trying to get the gas in one and let the other fella know, you know, that you don't have to wait long. I'll be right with you. So I'm hurrying, and I say, I'll be right with you, sir. And next thing I know, I look up, and he's in the office, and he's talking to Eddie. And he's got a bottle of soda pop in his hand. And I think, well, I'll be damned. I'm the only one that's hurrying. And so what I saw was, that's what I was taught to do in Winn-Dixie. When I was on that cash register, you're supposed to run through as fast as you can. And if it takes you a little while on one order, what you do is you stop in the middle and you lean over and you say, I'll be right with you all. Just take a moment. Just to keep them patient. And you always look up and say, hello, how are you doing today? And go back to your work like nobody's standing there. So you never make contact with them. You just say something and go back to your work. And they call that being friendly. Well, it's polite, but it's not friendly. you sound like a tape recorder on that register. You say, hello, how are you today? And it doesn't matter if there's a dog there. You say the same thing. Well, that's what I do. I go out to there, and I go up to the car. Hello, how are you today? And they look at me so funny. And I say, can I help you? And they'll say, gas. You know, what else you gonna do?
And then
Eddie doesn't say that. Eddie gives him a hard time. Why don't you get that thing fixed? Well, that fella drove in that night with a front end that was sagging way down. And it was, the fella came in and he says, Eddie, I broke a spring. And Eddie says, well, I haven't seen you in about a year. I think I got some of your bills. He goes in and he digs through his files and he comes out with these little bills, and they're all, you know, greasy from thumbprints. He says, where have you been for a year? And the fellow says, well, I had to leave, Eddie. I had to go out of town. He said, and without paying your bills, too. He says, well, Eddie, I always leave my bills a year before I pay them. I'm going to do that with my bills all the time from now on. Well, he wanted to put that car up on the lift and repair the spring. He had the part with him. Eddie just walked off and went back to washing this engine. And that's what Eddie did all week long. All, you know, that whole weekend is just wash this engine off. And after a while, he kind of looks at me and looks at the fellow, shakes his head, says, bring it on in. So the fellow drives his car in and we put it up on the lift. And Eddie looks at it. And he gets his torch out, and he cuts one part of the spring off, and we pull that out, but we couldn't get the other part off. Eddie just walked off and went back to washing off his engine. And this fella got me in there to hold the bar, and he would hammer on the bar trying to knock that spring out. After a while, Eddie walked back over and got his torch out again, and went to heating the place that was stuck. He'd heat it and say, all right, beat on it. And I'd hold the bar, and the guy would beat on it. And then Eddie would heat it some more, and it finally popped out. Eddie'd turn off his torch and hang it back on the rack and go back and wash his engine off some more. And we'd fight that new spring, and we couldn't get it lined up, and we couldn't get it lined up. Eddie'd finally come back over and say, you see this? That's the bolt that adjusts the spring. You got to undo that. So he'd undo it. We'd work with it a little bit and got the spring in. Eddie took the wrench and he stuck it back and tightened that bolt up, lowered the car. He says, there it is, it's right on the money. And the car was, it was level, you know. You could change that bolt adjustment all kinds of ways and get the car off, but it sat down just perfectly level. So he would just go back to washing off his block. He didn't ask the fellow for money or anything. And I thought, when you look in a car manual, it'll tell you how to adjust that bolt. It'll tell you how to adjust it up to the hundredth of an inch. It'll make you get a ruler out and measure the height of the car to make sure you got it right. And Eddie just stuck an air wrench on there, and then lowered the car and looked at it and said, it's right on the money. And it was fun. So what I'm beginning to see is that as a mechanic, Eddie's pretty good. He can just kind of look at it and tell. He doesn't consult the book. Well, I've begun to think, too, he doesn't ask a whole lot of his help. Except maybe show up when he wants you to, you know, when you're supposed to. Franklin didn't quite do that sometimes. But you see, Eddie never told me a thing to do. He says to Janet, show Ricky. And Janet showed me which button to push on the register when you ring up gas, and which button to push when you ring up oil. And Eddie pointed to the oil cans lined up and says, that one's 65, that one's 75, that one's 85. He went on back to work on his engine. And so I just kind of would ring up, you know, go out and pump gas and come in and ring it up. Well, it wasn't hard to learn, But Eddie would somehow be in the office every time I came in to ring up the first few orders. You know, like he would open the soda machine and get a soda out. Or just lean there and look through a book. And I thought he was, you know, on some business in the office, and then it dawned on me later, no, he's just keeping his eye on me to make sure I was running things right. Never said a word.
Why, Rick?
Now, I'd seen him change tires a few times in that tire machine, you know, and you set the rim on there and bolt it in place, and then you've got a little tool you hook onto it, and you push a foot pedal, and it spins it around and pops the tire off. Well, I'd seen Eddie do that once or twice. He never said a word about how to work the machine. It just, a fella came in, needed the tire put on a rim, and Eddie didn't make any move to do it, so I figured, well, it's up to me to do it. So I put the tire on, stuck the tool in backwards, hit the switch and jammed it. And Eddie had his back to me, you see. He was washing his engine. And I thought that engine was getting awful clean by now. He'd been washing that block for maybe about an hour, you see, and I'd been over there working on this tire. And he'd never make a move to look over his shoulder or anything. He'd just wait till I said, Eddie? And then he'd stick the hose in the block and walk over and look at what I'd done. If he'd push down the tire a little bit and hit the foot pedal, the tool would free up and go around. And all he ever said was, just make sure the bead of the tire gets down there before you push the pedal. That was all he ever said. He'd go back and wash his engine. I thought he was washing his engine the whole time, and he wasn't. He was just keeping his eye on me. But he was letting me figure it out.
Isn't that amazing?
Now, I would never expect him to have that kind of a touch.
Isn't that amazing?
You reckon he didn't? That's what he did?
It must have been. Because, you know, you could rip a tire up if you don't do it right. And I began to see whenever I was doing something new, he was there. When we put cars on the rack, I know how they work. You get the rack lined up on the frame. And I'd get over there and hook it all up. And then Eddie would just have to stop by and bend down like he's going to help me. And he'd just check and make sure I got them right the first few times. When he saw I could do it, he left me alone.
Isn't that amazing? You know, that's the same sort of thing that I saw Janet work with Franklin. It's the same thing. She praised Franklin. And then even I could tell that he had something wrong on the car. I knew it was wrong. And Janet said, Franklin, what did you think would happen if you tried it this way? It's just amazing.
Mm-hmm. He's always got time, far as I can see, to say a word or two to anybody that comes in. And I always thought of Eddie as not ever saying much. Well, he doesn't. He doesn't talk a long time, but he's got a word or two for anybody that comes in there. He knows them all. And it's never polite. No. He doesn't say, hello, how are you today?
Why did he say to me the last time I was over there, I sat in the car and you went in there?
No, that was when you brought the tractor over, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And the tire was low?
No, last time you just went in and checked him on something, and he it didn't take it off, and he came to the door there and hollered at me. He says, you just let the heads of state take care of the business?
Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, we went in one day with that tractor and wanted some air in the tires. And you ask him how much air. He says, I don't know how much air goes in those tractor tires. You're the farmer. Then he says, now don't get your finger caught in it, Mr. Miles. You know, the black people can come in and just take over your station. You know, They don't ask. They walk in and haul the jacks out and jack up their car and take your screwdrivers and take their engines apart and everything. And there's a lot of them that come around there, and I get a little nervous because I know what they'll do. And as Janet said, that's why they don't hire them, because when you hire one, they bring their friends around.
Well, that's a great relief. I guess it don't take a wizard to learn that.
No, but I haven't seen any of them take over when Eddie's there. You know, they come in and say, well, you know, and whoever it was that used to run the station. When he was here, we used to have credit. And Eddie would go, oh, yeah? And tighten a bolt and walk off. And that's it. They don't ask anymore. He hadn't said no. He hadn't said yes. He just, and left it.
He is something to know. He is. I think that is something. I can believe it.
But.
Well, now look, Rick, when you was up there today and you were hitting it too hard, that got nothing to do with when Dixie is out there. That's just when you're sitting at a desk, you just can't come out and be easy in a job like that. Mm-hmm. Always jerky.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I figure it, because that's the way I am.
Yeah.
And I've never seen anybody who could, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you're actually doing desk work. We were cutting over the limb, and Rick got up there and was doing most of the sawing, and he got fighting.
Going about it in the hardest way I could. Mm-hmm.
It's hard.
But that's another symptom. Mm-hmm. That's not Wendixie or anything. That's just too much desperate.
So he just had to have a little something to do to be busy and yet to be free. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's possible. I can see that.
Well, now that first one day when you came in, you said Janet, they had in Chicago. They both had jobs.
She'd worked. Said I think it was the first 10.5 years they were married before they had any kids.
She lived, see, they long getting long.
He worked and she worked, and I guess they lived in the suburbs. And she said, you know, I didn't know anybody. I didn't see anybody. You know, and I guess when you're young, you don't notice that. You don't miss it. But Lord, we come down here, and there's just so much going on, and everybody comes in here, and I just like to find out what's going on. And I said, well, life gets pretty exciting, doesn't it? And she said, yes, I can hardly wait to find out what things are going on.
And everybody likes it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody that I hear anything say. And him too.
Yeah. See, they'll all come in and talk. Freddie Wood comes in with an old starter that won't crank. And then they get to talking about the beef boycott. And just knocking it back and forth. And Freddie says, well, with the price of feed the way it is, how can they expect a farmer to drop down his beef prices? And I thought, where would I ever get to hear Freddie Wood talk? And I can stand here and hold a wrench or something, they won't pay any attention to me. And I can listen. And after a while, I'll just be the kid that works up there, and I can, you know, go where I please.
This fella.
Yeah, this fella. Hmm. Well, he's got a pace. He's got a pace. You see, Sunday he had that tractor to weld, and he knew he'd have some tires to fix. And he's got that engine he's supposed to put in that Cutlass, and that's not due till Tuesday. And so he spent most of the time Sunday working on his own engine. And then if he got tired of that, he'd go, well, he went over and bolted the air conditioner on the Cutlass and put the power steering pump on, and then after a while he'd leave that and go back and work on his engine. He'd take...
Well, now, what was it, Saturday night he put a motor in?
Mm-hmm. He put it in the car Saturday night, then he started hooking it up. He just put in enough bolts Saturday night to hold it, you know.
So it didn't work late?
No, 9 o'clock, that was it. Janet asked him, are you going to work on this? And he said, no. So Sunday he put a few more bolts in, and every time, Saturday night he said, well, I'll crawl under it tomorrow and put the bolts in. He meant the main mount bolts. Sunday when he closed, he said the same thing. Well, tomorrow I'll crawl under and put the bolts in.
And Janet said he'd rather be there in that station than anywhere she could think of.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
You mean he's just a natural?
He just loves it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I begin to think that that's what Eddie does and does well is mechanics. Because he was welding, and when he finished, he was proud of his welding. And I've never welded, but I've heard people say that you don't just pick up and weld. It takes a while to learn. And Eddie finished, and he looked at it, and he tapped it with a hammer, and it was solid. And he was pleased. And he said, well, it's not perfect, but for what Freddie Wood's paying, that's not bad. And I'm going to get me some more of these all-purpose welding rods. They do so nice on everything. He said, now you see this weld here? And he pointed to the old weld, you know, been on there a long time. And it was just perfect. It was smooth and all the little wrinkles were just right. He said, now the fellow that does that probably welds 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. But I did pretty good. You see, I got some wrinkles in there. And if I hadn't gotten to moving fast, I wouldn't have had these little notches in there. He said, Lord, when I first got this rig, I was piling it up an inch high in places. But that's pretty good weld. That's when he said, you know, these all-purpose welding rods are what I need. They'll weld anything. Well, what do I say? I just blurted out and said, will they weld aluminum? Because I knew damn well they wouldn't weld aluminum. Because I knew that's the hardest thing in the world to weld. And Eddie just came right back and said, no, aluminum's hard to weld. You see, you have to weld about an inch of it and then let it cool for 4 hours. Otherwise, it'll get so hot, it'll crack. And then you go back and you weld another inch and you let it cool for 4 more hours. And I saw what I'd done. I was challenging his knowledge. And he's got it. He's got it. He doesn't show it around, but it's there.
If you wait him out?
Well, if you just watch, you'll see it. He won't come out and say, well, he was changing the oil in the checking the oil in the differential of a car, you know, in the rear end. And he just walked up and opened his hand and said, this is the wrench we use. And he didn't say what kind it was or what size. He just showed it to me. So I could see, and I'll know what it looks like. It's just the way he has about telling you what he does.
Isn't that amazing?
And if you ever want to see somebody that has a little love for an engine, you watch Eddie, because when he drove in with that Datsun, and he had the back end of that little pickup truck full of engine parts, Janet knew what he was going to do. He had this 55 Chevy with a big racing engine in it, and that's an engine he's had for years. He's just put it in one car after another. And he traded that engine in that 55 Chevy for this engine that wasn't together and the body of a 67 Camaro to put it in. And Janet just wanted him to sell the old racing engine because they got a $400 income tax thing they had to pay this month. and it's kind of, I guess, set them a little tight. So Eddie drove in with the truck and got out, and Janet said, "You traded, didn't you?" And what did Eddie say? He said, "You know, it rained just as soon as I got away. I just drove right into it." And then he just kind of leaned on the truck and looked at the engine. And I just got this feeling that he wanted to sit right down and put the engine together right then. But he didn't. He just walked off and left it wet. Because
yeah.
He knew it had enough oil on it where it wouldn't rust. He just left it. And I guess he's got it all set up about how long it'll take him. And he's always got something to do. He's always got that engine to go back to.
Yeah.
And his son, Jeffrey, was saying, "I think you did the wrong thing, Dad. That Chevy was running. I think you did the wrong thing." And Eddie never said a word. He just looked at that engine, and he was just kind of so pleased. And when they got that Camaro in, well, it's in rough shape. The trunk's all rusted out. And the front end's been, you know, it's been wrecked. It was fixed. It wasn't a bad wreck. But you can see there's some bend-up things in it. And he rolled the Camaro in and opened the hood. And we would just look at it. And he'd say, "I'll get me a new fender liner. And a new frame here for the radiator. And I'll have to clean that hood off and paint all that real good." And his son's inside, meanwhile, cleaning the headliner. And I walked by, and Eddie said, "Look at this." And I looked up, and the headliner was just, it's black, but it was shining where he cleaned it. And in the back, it looked all sooty, like somebody burned a candle in there or something. And he said, "Would you look at that?" And he just sat there with a rag and cleaned out all the dials on the dashboard and all across the dash and wiped off the steering wheel. And I looked at it, and you could see they had somebody messed around with the wiring. And it was all dangling and broken loose. And I said, "Looks like somebody really kind of messed around with this thing." And he said, "Yeah, you know what they do. They go to build a fast car, and they try to build it too fast. You can't do that. If you're going to build a fast car, you've got to take your time." I said, "Eddie, how long did it take you to get this thing going?" "Oh, about a week." "So you're taking about a week to get the engine together and in the car, and maybe another week or two to clean it up."
And that's what Cookie left.
That's what Cookie left. I said to Eddie, you know, I thought, he told Janet that he traded because he could get more. Said I'd get maybe $500 for that old Chevy with the racing engine. If I get this one together, I could get about $1,200. So I said to Eddie, I said, "After you get it together, what, you reckon you'll sell it?" And he goes, "No, I always wanted one of these to drive." "But if somebody offers me enough money..."
But that's too much for Franklin. He couldn't see that.
Mm-hmm. No.
No. Franklin had... probably had a good deal there because Eddie didn't expect anything of him. I think Eddie kind of would enjoy teaching him and just having to keep an eye on him.
Imagine.
No, you said, you said, Faye said, he didn't tell me. And that the boy was just stupid.
Yes, Eddie said that to me. Finally, I waited
yeah,
for that. And
yeah.
Finally, Eddie said, "You know, he's just stupid."
Oh, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I imagine he saw it pretty
yeah.
early. But he just went along with him.
Tried to
because he could do the front.
Mm-hmm. That's when he kept tearing up these cars. Just tearing up one car after the other.
Mm.
"No," he says, "he's just stupid." But even after he said that, he let him come back and work there. He didn't make him leave.
I asked him, I said, "Well, you think Franklin will be back?" And they said no, it was a matter of pride. But he still owes a little bit on a bill. But I said, well, he's working up there in Barclay Toyota. And Eddie said, I don't know. He was supposed to start Monday, but I heard somebody say they saw he and his father in Leesburg on Tuesday. And that would have been last week.
Well, Monday was the day Cookie came here. Twice. First thing in the morning. Then after supper. And he thought he was going to leave Monday afternoon for West Virginia again.
Monday? Yeah.
But he had to do something else. And he's going to leave Tuesday.
This is fascinating to me. Nobody ever taught Eddie how to teach. And that's
now that manner,
perfect.
I'd never expect him to be gruff like that.
Give you a hard time.
And that just brings the people around in droves. And all those black people come in and want stuff done, and they don't take over the station.
Mm-hmm.
They might get him a little on credit, but I don't think Eddie, I think Janet takes care of the bills. I think Eddie just lets her do all that, and he takes care of the mechanical work. And I think what he'd like is somebody pump gas so he can just sit back there and repair cars. And that'd suit him fine. Because you know, when you go in that station, it's a little messy. But there's nothing you can throw away or straighten up. All is an old torn up gasket or something like that, but most of it's old generators and old carburetors. And I, kidding Janet, you know, I just said, oh, I'm a great thrower away-er. And she laughed and said, oh, don't do that without asking anybody. And she pointed at all this, you know, and he's got must be a 40-foot shelf. And it's just jam-packed with just old engine parts. And she said, would you believe none of that was there when we started? And Eddie just kind of smiled. And I said, what are you going to do with it? And she said, well, we don't know, but just don't throw it away. I've had to go back to the junkyard for parts I threw away because he was using them.
I just think he's marvelous. I really do.
I wonder what he thought when I just gave him that old that old red car.
I don't know.
You know, Janet took that Chevrolet up and got the tag for it. And I said, Janet, I just made a check out for more than it was, the bill. And she gave it back to me. She said, that's not right. You make it out for what it's supposed to be. I said, well, you took it up there. You drove. Well, she said, I had to go anyway. Nobody ever pays me for that sort of thing. That's my business. I said, you don't have to go get car tag, inspection, get a car inspected. Well, she laughed, that merry laugh, and she said, well, I got to ride up there in your car, didn't I? You can't beat that.
You know, I never saw such a lift. She has. I haven't seen Eddie, to tell you the truth.
Eddie's just got it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie told me one day, and every once in a while, he'll come out there, and he'll phone out there, and he'll call me Grandma, or some ridiculous thing, or, you know, old lady, or anything that comes into his mind. Can't you keep this car filled up? What do you want to let it get so dry for? You know, that's why I'm sassy, too. Mm-hmm. And one day, his kids were out there playing, and he yelled at them, and he told them to get out. He said to me, if it hadn't been for Janet, we wouldn't have that many kids. She kept wanting a girl. And the last time, I said, look, boy or girl, this is it. And I just went and got myself fixed. I said, there's more family than I ever bargained for. And he went right ahead, working on my car. We were there, he did.
You know, they've got a little puppy dog, a little German Shepherd. I guess they're figuring it'll hang around the station at night, just a little, have a big dog, yeah. That's named Smokey. And he's always running Smokey out of the station, but he never says it hard enough to keep the dog away. Well, he'd been working all afternoon Sunday, fixing those tires, and then he's working on that Cutlass, trying to get that engine in. And about 4 o'clock, the little puppy walked in, and he looks over and says, "Hello, Smokey, how are you doing? I haven't seen you all day. Come on over here." He just dropped his wrenches, dropped everything, squatted down, and played with the dog for 5 minutes. But I thought by the end of the day, you ought to be out of humor a little bit. But it was like he hadn't even had a car to work on. He just, all attention to that puppy. I was just amazed.
Rick said he went over there to the typewriter to look at Eddie, and he saw himself.
Yeah. Just blundering into the customers. Did it all wrong. And I'd get myself flustered, you know, and they'd say regular, and I'd start putting in high test.
Ask him like you did at Winn-Dixie. Can I help you?
Be business and polite.
Yes, when all they wanted is just to talk a little.
Yes, have some gas.
And talk like this.
Yeah.
You never thought you'd learn somebody outside the university like that.
No.
That's just beautiful. Eddie leaned up against the door. With a slack time. I visit here. I go over there a lot. Used to more than I do now. And Eddie was he just leaned up against the door. And I declare, I don't know how he got into it. I don't know any transition at all. Oh, his mother, Janet said his mother was down in Ocala, and that's why they came down here to be near his mother. She needed somebody to be near him. Yeah. And Eddie turned and he saw a smile. He's got that almost little boy smile.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "You know, as long as I live, I'll remember the night she left me. I was 3, something like that, 3 or 4, Chicago. And I was playing a phonograph and I kept playing the same record over and over. And I finally realized nobody was there in the house. And I was scared. And my mother had run away and left me. And I went out in the street, and I went up and down the street crying. I was scared. And I can hear that phonograph right now. And I can feel how scared I was. And policemen found me. And took me to my grandmother's. And my grandmother brought me up. And he said, I don't blame my mother. Her old man drove her to it. I don't blame her. I take care of her. And Janet said, well, you're the only one. It's a couple of brothers are drunkards and somebody else. Everybody in the family drinks except Eddie. And I was just sort of taken it was such a sudden thing for Eddie to talk like this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Eddie looked at me and grinned and said, you wonder why I don't drink? And I said, well, Eddie, I guess I do. It's my grandmother. He said, why, we had sometimes $20 a month to live on in Chicago. Let's get heat. And food, and he said, we lived out of the garbage can. When I was a little boy, I'd go and my grandmother too, oftentimes we'd have to get what we could get out of the garbage can. He didn't say it to make you feel bad. He had that face. He said, but my grandmother was real. It was a lucky day when she took me. It was just beautiful. It was just absolutely beautiful.
And he was brought up in Chicago.
Brought up in Chicago, out of a garbage can. And he knows what it is to be, he said he never, I know the transition. Janet was standing there and she had a pair, she said, my feet hurt, Eddie. He said, well, if you didn't have those bunions, you'd be all, if you hadn't let your sister give you shoes too small for you, you wouldn't have those bunions. And Janet says, well, I never had any shoes of my own till I was grown. I had to wear my sister's shoes. He said, well, don't brag about that. I never had any underpants. I never even wore a pair of underpants until I was 16 years old. I said, oh, hey, you kid, you carry on like that. He said, well, is it true? I never knew what that folks are supposed to have a pair of underpants. I did well to have a pair of pants. And that's where it started. And yet you don't have the feeling that now that they can do some things for their own children that they're proud of, that they, you have no feeling that Eddie has felt that he's missed the thing. And this was the genuine, this was the marvelous, the beautiful thing about it. And he said, just as if he was the luckiest fellow in the whole world to have this grandmother. And he doesn't hold it against his mother, and he's taking care of his mother and came all the way down here to be close to her. But he's not sanctimonious about it. He's not saying, look at me.
She came all the way to be close to him.
There's the other way. She was here first.
Oh.
She was in Ocala. It's my understanding that she was...
He
came down here so he'd be close to his mother. Because she was getting old and she needed somebody to be around. And he said, Janet will fuss all day. She's got all those kids over there. I don't know how she does it. I don't know how she puts up. I don't know why she doesn't just go crazy over there in that trailer with all those kids and no place. But he said, you know, the people come by here and want to take those kids somewhere. She won't let them go. She's the craziest thing about those kids you ever saw. She's not going to let any of those kids get away from her. You know, he's just so proud of it. You see, he's proud of it. It's just beautiful. It really is.
But you saw Mr. Huff.
He drives up in the brand new Pontiac station wagon. I mean, it's brand new. Blue, the wood panel on the sides. And he's almost a little snotty. But it wasn't really that. It was just that I didn't know what he wanted. I guess Franklin had been there so much, or Eddie, that he doesn't have to say when he drives up. They just know to fill it up with regular. And he saw I was new. He says, you work here? I said, yeah. And what happened to everybody? I said, well, Franklin's working up Toyota people now. He said, oh, fill up with regular. My card's inside. Well, Janet had told me, we keep Mr. Huff's card here. And she unlocked a little drawer there and showed me where they keep the card. And then she said, now down here we keep his stamps. And they've got a cigar box that says Mr. Huff on it. And it's full of green stamps.
Oh, dear.
And I said, well, you must be Mr. Huff. My name is Rick Reynolds. And I went on and filled up his tank. And made out the card and everything. And brought it out and handed it to him. He just signed it, didn't pay a bit of attention to what it was. And Janet had said something about, oh, you could probably make out 2 or 3 tickets, Mr. Huff would sign them. He'd never know.
Cigar?
No, didn't have a cigar. Had a trunk full of fishing tackle and paddles. But he just breezes in and breezes out.
They leased the station from him, Faye.
From Huff?
Oh, yes. Miller did.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I thought Miller owned the station. I don't know how I thought.
But you know, Shell owned the station.
Yeah. that's right. Well, that's something. You never think that these people from Chicago have this sort of feeling.
I gotta stop by there tonight. He's got an engine in there. Somebody.